Have you ever watched the fuel gauges bounce around in a Cessna and thought, well, that's not very reassuring? You're not wrong. Those gauges are only required to read accurate at one point empty. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about the thing that quietly ends more flights than weather ever does, fuel specifically. How to plan it, how the regulations frame it, and why the number that keeps you legal is not the number that keeps you alive. Let's walk through this together. Before we go further, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter and to remember the version of you who was terrified of soft field landings. aviationsoul.com. Okay, fuel, here's the regulation. And I want to read it plainly because a lot of pilots have never actually sat with the words. Federal Aviation Regulation 91-151 under the Federal Aviation Administration rules for a flight in daytime under visual flight rules. You may not begin that flight unless you have enough fuel to fly to your first point of intended landing, and assuming normal cruising speed to fly after that for at least 30 minutes. 30 minutes in the day. At night, that number becomes 45 minutes. Now read it again and notice what it does not say. It does not say 30 minutes when you arrive. It says 30 minutes of reserve planned before you take off at normal cruise. It is a planning minimum. It is a floor. It is the legal edge of the cliff. And the regulation is describing where the cliff is, not where you should stand. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The regulation is a legal minimum, not a safety target. Those are two completely different jobs. The reg exists so the FAA can point at a number after something goes wrong. Your fuel plan exists so nothing goes wrong in the first place. Do not confuse the two. Let me give you a scenario. You're planning a cross-country from your home field out to an airport about 140 nautical miles away. You're flying a Cessna 172. Let's say it burns roughly 8 gallons an hour in cruise, and you've got useful long-range tanks holding about 53 gallons usable. On paper, that's a lot of airplane for a short hop. On paper, you do the math the way the check ride wants you to. The examiner is looking for you to compute time en route, multiply by fuel burn, add your reserve, and compare against usable fuel. So, 140 miles, let's say a ground speed of 110 knots, that's roughly 1 hour and 16 minutes of flying. At 8 gallons an hour, call it about 10 gallons of fuel for the trip. 10 gallons. Out of 53. You could fly there and back twice. And this is exactly where pilots get lazy, because the margin looks enormous, so they stop respecting the details. Then one day the tanks aren't full. The headwind is stronger than forecast, the destination goes below minimums, and suddenly that comfortable airplane is doing the math you should have done on the ground. So let's do it right. Step 1. Never trust the fuel gauge for planning. Plan with time and known burn rate. The gauge is a cross-check in the air, not a planning tool on the ground. You plan fuel the same way you plan a descent, with numbers you computed ahead of time, in a quiet cockpit when nothing was going wrong. Step 2. Know your actual usable fuel, not the number on the brochure. Usable fuel is what you can actually feed the engine. Unusable fuel is the amount that sloshes below the pickup and never reaches the cylinders. On some airplanes, that difference is a couple of gallons. And here's the part that gets people. Full tanks on the dipstick does not always mean full usable fuel, especially if the airplane isn't sitting level or if you topped off on a slope. Know your airplane's real number from the pilot's operating handbook and verify it visually. Step 3. Compute burn from lean of the mixture you'll actually fly, not the optimistic book number. Book numbers come from a test pilot flying a clean airplane at a precise power setting with a leaning technique you probably won't replicate exactly. Real world, add a fudge factor. I like to plan burn a little higher than book and ground speed a little lower than hoped. Pessimism on the ground buys you options in the air. Step 4, and this is the big one. Build your reserve as time on top of your worst realistic arrival, not your best case. Let me explain what I mean. The regulation says 30 minutes at normal cruise, but your reserve should answer a different question. If everything that could reasonably go a little wrong does go a little wrong, how long can I still fly? Headwind 10 knots stronger than forecast. A departure delay burning fuel on the ground. Your destination reporting a runway closure, so you go to the field 12 miles down the road. An unfamiliar airport where you fly a full pattern twice because the first approach didn't feel right. None of those is an emergency. Every one of them eats minutes, and minutes are gallons. Here's how I coach my students to think about it. Legal is 30 minutes day, 45 night. personal minimum for a normal cross-country. 1 hour of fuel in the tanks when you touch down, not planned. Actually remaining. If your plan doesn't leave you landing with an hour, you either take less airplane, more fuel, or a fuel stop. An hour sounds conservative, it is, that's the point. Fuel exhaustion accidents almost never happen to the pilot who planned an hour of reserve. They happen to the pilot who planned the legal 30 and then reality took 20 of it before they ever got close. Let's talk about the two ways fuel accidents actually happen, because they are different problems. The first is fuel exhaustion. That's when the tanks are truly dry. No fuel left. This is a planning failure, and it is almost entirely preventable on the ground with honest numbers. The second is fuel starvation. That's when there is fuel in the airplane, but it isn't reaching the engine. Wrong tank selected. A fuel selector left on a tank that ran dry while the other tank was full. This one is a cockpit management failure, and it happens to experienced pilots more than you'd think because they got complacent about switching tanks on a schedule. So your fuel plan has two halves, how much fuel and how you'll manage it in flight. Both matter. A perfect fuel load feeding from an empty tank will still make the propeller very quiet. Here's a habit worth building. Pick a tank switching interval and hold to it. Some pilots switch every 30 minutes. Some balance by burn, whatever you choose, write it down and cross-check it against the clock and the gauges together. When the gauge and the clock disagree, believe the more pessimistic one and start planning a stop. Now let's tie this back to the actual cross-country plan, because fuel doesn't live alone on your navigation log. It lives next to your alternates. Even under visual flight rules, when you're not legally required to file an alternate, plan one anyway, for every leg, know the answer to this question. If I can't land where I intended, where am I going instead, and do I have the fuel to get there with reserve intact? That's not paperwork. That's the difference between a diversion and an emergency. And here's a subtle trap. A headwind out is a tailwind home, so pilots feel safe. But if you're flying an out and back, and you plan to refuel at the destination, and the destination fuel pump is out of service, now you're flying home on what you arrived with. Call ahead. Confirm fuel is available and that they take your form of payment. Self-serve pumps go down. Fuel trucks run out on a busy weekend. The pump being on the field is not the same as fuel being in your tank. Let me give you the ground checklist I actually use, and I want you to notice it starts before the airplane. 1. Confirm fuel is available and purchasable at every planned stop. 2. Compute time en route for each leg using conservative ground speed. 3. Multiply by a conservative burn rate. 4. Add your personal reserve. Not the legal reserve, your reserve. 5. Compare the total against actual usable fuel, verified visually, not just by gauge. 6. If the numbers are tight, the answer is a fuel stop. It is always a fuel stop. Fuel stops are cheap. They cost you 20 minutes and a landing fee. The alternative costs considerably more. And then in the air, one more thing. Do a fuel check at every checkpoint. Note the time, note the gauges, note whether you're burning at the rate you planned. If your actual burn is running ahead of plan, you'll know it over checkpoint 3, when you still have every option available, instead of over checkpoint 7, when you have none. The examiner is looking for exactly this on your check ride. On the cross-country portion, they want to see that you can compute fuel required, identify your reserve, and articulate what you'd do if the winds aloft turned out worse than forecast. But more than the arithmetic, they're looking for the mindset. They want a pilot who treats fuel as a resource to be managed continuously, not a box that got checked once in the run-up area. The Airman Certification Standards spell this out under cross-country flight planning. You're expected to make a competent fuel plan and to demonstrate in-flight fuel management. That word, management, is doing a lot of work. It means you didn't stop thinking about fuel after engine start. I'll be honest with you about something. Learning to fly is hard, and it is expensive, and there is real pressure to stretch a flight so you don't pay for a second landing fee or a fuel stop that eats into an already thin budget. I understand that pressure. I felt it as a student, and I feel it now. But fuel is the one place I will never let a student or myself be clever. There is no destination worth arriving on fumes. The airplane does not care how much the extra stop cost. It only cares whether there's gas in the line. So here's your takeaway for the next flight. Before you go, land on a number. Decide, on the ground, the minimum fuel you will accept in the tanks when you touch down at your destination. Make it an hour, write it on your nav log, and then treat that number like a hard deck. If the plan can't protect it, the plan changes, not the number. That's the whole discipline right there. The regulation tells you where the edge is. Your job is to build a plan that keeps you well back from it every single time, so that on the day the wind is wrong and the pump is broken and the pattern is full, you're not doing math, you're just landing. My thanks to the FAA for the regulations in Part 91 and to the Airman Certification Standards for framing what good fuel planning actually looks like. You can find more from the show over at radiohangar.com. Fly with full tanks and honest numbers, and I'll see you back in the pattern.